This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Bet $5, get $150 instantly in bonus bets from DraftKings when you download the app and you sign up with the promo code SHARP. This is for new customers, S-H-A-R-P. Sign up. $5 gets you $150 in bonus bets instantly. You can't beat that. Plus, all bettors every day, a no sweat, same game parlay at DraftKings. The crown is yours. Dustin Sweetelson, I'm Patrick Maher. This is Sharp Money presented by DraftKings as we welcome you back on a Friday, December 1. You made it Friday and December. And we're going to bring in a guy that is 13 games over 500, going deep into his bag, 27-14 in college hoops so far. And he doesn't even bet his own money because he runs a book. Of course, Atlantic City, the Borgata Race and Sportsbook Director, Thomas Gable, joins us now. He's just doing it out of the kindness of his heart for you, as we say hi to our good friend, TG. Hi, Thomas. How are you?
Good, and thank you for specifying that, just in case any regulators are listening in the state of New Jersey, because I'm not permitted to bet in New Jersey. So
it's very important to know. Yes, yep. He literally just a gesture while he's putting together his board for the day at the Borgata. He just sends along some suggestions to me, and then I take advantage of them. That's all it is. Yep. And you've been on a nice little run.
Now it's been a good start, good month to open the season, and it's actually one of the better months I've had in college basketball in a couple of years. So it's hopefully it can stay afloat here as we head into December.
Well, Thomas could go. I know him too long. He could go 100-0, or he could go 0-100, and he would sound exactly the same. He'd say, "Yeah, well, we're just doing our best. We're putting one foot in front of the other, and we'll just keep trying." And that's why you're the best, TG. Wanted to bring you on to discuss. This is a huge weekend, and it starts tonight. I want your opinion as well on Washington and Oregon, but fascinating. So where'd you open with the Pac-12 championship game, and where are you currently sitting at the Borgata?
So open 7.5. And if we remember the previous meeting this year between these two, which Washington won, I think that game was around 3, and Oregon has been such a popular play with the betting public since that game. And they've been, make no mistake about it, they've looked tremendous. They really are really right up there in the power ratings with Georgia and Michigan in terms of all of college football. So the spread here being opening 7.5, it's gotten as high as 10 in certain spots. 9.5 here was the high point. We started getting some Washington money there at 9.5. Now at 9 currently, and literally probably only 20 minutes ago, before I got on the phone with you guys, somebody came in, put down $75,000 on Oregon laying the 9. This is just going to be, I almost wish this game was tomorrow because there'll be more people in town, but it's going to be a very heavily bet game, and two programs that obviously are right in the thick of things for the college football playoffs. So it's a game that it's just drawing a ton of interest, as you figured that it would be when you get two programs of this caliber who are right there for postseason berths.
You know, it's funny because you said Thomas Gable, of course, live from Atlantic City, the Borgata, the best spot on the East Coast. It appears everybody watched and came away with the same feelings about Oregon with their loss at Washington. A couple of mistakes by Lanning, but most, the casual to the sharp better, feels they're the better team. I was so off. If you asked me a month ago, I thought this would open 4.5-ish Oregon. A bookmaker said, no, it's going to be closer to a touchdown. It ends up opening 7.5. So that perception is more than I could have imagined.
And I think the other thing that we have to talk about that really isn't being talked about, I don't know if you guys have really noticed anything. Michael Penix is not the same that he was in the beginning of the season. And there seems to be something going on there with him. He's just not he's not the same guy that he was to start the season. And I'm not quite sure what that was. I guess it was last weekend with the crying at the end of the game. You know, just, I mean, I know he's an emotional guy, but it's just an odd reaction to see. So I don't know if the guy's 100% healthy. Obviously, he's going to be playing, but there's definitely a difference there.
Oh, totally agree. Something's off with Penix. The month of November in particular, so he just didn't look himself. 100% agree. Let's talk about some of these other games and just how they're betting them. Let's go to the big one, Georgia-Alabama SEC championship game in Atlanta. You know, I'm looking at the board right now, and we're 4.5, as high as 5.5 at DraftKings. How about at the Borgata?
Yeah, we're actually sitting 5.5 as well. And yeah, you're seeing some 4.5 still, 5, 5.5. Depending where you shop at. But right now, pretty evenly bet game here. A little bit more money on Georgia. The Georgia money line was hit pretty early by sharps. Just obviously a little bit cheaper when this first opened up. Bumped the money line price up a little bit on Georgia. But the total sitting 55.5. You can actually find a 54.5, I guess, still out there too. But that's right around where most places open, 55, 55.5. I would not be surprised to see this game go over. Georgia's offense has looked better in recent weeks. And, you know, this is going to be the most heavily bet game on Saturday, I think. This is the one that's getting most of the attention. The Big Ten matchup isn't obviously that sexy with Iowa in there as a 22.5 point dog at this point, or 23 point dog. So this Georgia Alabama game, this is going to get the attention really from a lot of the bettors. And probably if you're looking at the next bet game, most bet game for Saturday, it's going to be Oklahoma State and Texas, even though there's a double digit spread in that one. But, you know, when you look at all these games and the implications, I don't know what you guys feel about Florida State, but if they win tomorrow, it's probably going to complicate a lot of things there for the committee. If they lose, it's probably what the committee's hoping for, and they don't even have to consider them.
The committee is nuanced. Get Florida State out of my life, Thomas Gable. I'm sorry. I don't want it for the kids, but I'm talking about, I want the four best teams. And we can all agree as adults, Florida State, even if they beat Louisville, not one of the four best. Question for you. You brought up Oklahoma State, Texas. How about Michigan, Iowa? So we're constantly talking about that division between sharps and squares. So professional bettors, or at least respected money. And then the rest of us. Most of the time you're going to find the respected money taking. Are even sharp bettors taking 21.5, 22 with Iowa against Michigan?
Haven't seen it yet. Have not seen it yet. So it's, you know, Michigan first half laying less than 2 touchdowns has been a play. And actually, I'll say this also, going back real quick to tonight's game, Oregon first half has been a very, very popular play from the public as well, laying 6 right now for the first half. But the Michigan game, it's interesting. I haven't seen much sharp money on this on either side at this point. I haven't seen any really come in on this particular game. And the public's laying at 22.5 with Michigan. And again, laying that first half spread. But it's for a Big Ten game in the Northeast, the Big Ten championship, it's rather soft in terms of the betting market. It really is.
Yeah, that's a big number. You mentioned, we just have a minute here, TG. You mentioned Oklahoma State and Texas. So what's your number with Texas laying a big number, and who are they taking?
So 15.5 is where we're sitting with that right now. And more money on Texas right now. But the ticket count actually favors Oklahoma State here. So we'll see how it goes in terms. This could go either way in terms of a need for us by tomorrow, kickoff at noon local time. Right now the money is a little bit more leaning Texas's way.
Well, let me put it this way. The suggestions that you've given to me in college hoops this year are paying a lot of people's rent. Okay. And we get a lot of great messages. We get great messages when you lose too, because people are just keyed in on what you have to say. So thank you for your suggestions thus far in college hoops. I appreciate it.
No problem at all. No problem at all. I'll keep them coming.
Okay, you're the best. Thomas Gable runs the race and sports book at the Borgata. Stop by, get an autograph, a selfie. He's legitimately the best. We'll talk to you next time, Thomas. Thank you.
All right, thanks, guys.
Okay, coming up next, Essen Kassim, Florida State. Do they feel left out and disrespected? That's next.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the sports betting network.
Okay, Sharp Money here on VSIN, the sports betting network, presented by DraftKings. I'm Patrick Maher, live from Los Angeles. Hope you're having a nice week as we welcome in December and head into a huge weekend. College football, big weekend starts tonight, of course, with the conference championships there in Vegas with Dustin Sweetle sitting probably just a few miles down the road at Allegiant Stadium off the strip. You've got the Pac-12 championship with a rematch. We all wanted it. We're going to get it. And that is, of course, Washington and Oregon. Oregon laying a big number there. We're going to welcome in Essen Kassim here to the show. Tallahassee Democrat, KnowlesSports.com writer. Essen does a great job. You can find him, Essen_Kassim on Twitter. And the reason I wanted to, first off, Essen, thank you for joining us. We appreciate it. Happy holidays. The reason I wanted to bring you on because I feel like the Florida State angle has been underreported nationally. Of course, if they win, they should get into the Final Four, missing their star quarterback. This number obviously has been affected by Rodemaker's potential injury against Florida. So this number, Florida State got all the way up to 3.5. And as we sit here right now, it's Florida State laying 1.5 against Louisville. Let's start there with the backup and Rodemaker. What do we know about his health?
Yeah, I mean, like you mentioned, you know, he took a hit sandwiched between two Florida defenders. One was ejected for targeting on that play. He left for a couple plays. Mike Norvell just wrapped up his press conference and mentioned that Rodemaker went through the protocols on the sideline, came back, was cleared by the medical staff, and then he started feeling some symptoms on Sunday. He was limited in practice this week, did some non-contact stuff, but nothing that suggested early in the week from what we saw from media practices that he would be, would miss the game. But obviously, if he's not been cleared yet, that's a major, major red flag. And we're sitting here Friday afternoon now, Friday evening, and we have not heard more, one way or another. It's not a great sign for his chances.
Let's talk about the big picture. Okay, there were a lot of expectations. Norvell's done a hell of a job as he slowly built a prestigious program back to the forefront here in Florida State. But big picture, obviously with Travis going down, absolutely crushes, I'm sure, the fan base. But let's talk about that fan base and what they think. If they beat Louisville, they're going to be undefeated, Power Five. You know, they've never missed a team in that particular situation, never missed the Final Four. What's the narrative right now around the Florida State team?
Yeah, I think a lot of people believe that they should be, if they win, they go undefeated. They go through an ACC schedule with wins over LSU, you know, at Clemson, Duke, when they were ranked at the time, you know, and then obviously a very talented Louisville team, which has done a great job of a turnaround in year one under Jeff Rom. They believe that they should be in, and I tend to agree with them. I think if you go undefeated, that's the way we play the regular season. I get the best players not playing, but they're not going to be able to play in the game. But the team around them is really good, and I think the team is deserving. It's not a football is a team sport, and at the end of the day, the quarterback does matter. It's the most important position. But if Florida State goes undefeated, they've passed every test that's been thrown at them. They deserve to be in the college football playoffs.
Essen, Brock Glenn is the third string quarterback on this team. Like, not many programs can go out there with a third stringer and still compete. What do you know about him? What have you seen from him, if you've seen anything from him? And is he good enough? Because, you know, Rodemaker's a guy who's been in the program for a couple of years despite being a backup. Is Brock Glenn a guy capable of getting the ball, those two NFL receivers on the outside?
I believe he is. You know, he plays a ton of confidence. He's a freshman, an early enrollee who got in early and impressed, like, the coaches. The entire coaching staff was just thrilled by his enthusiasm, his just his passion to learn. And he did a really good job to start off with. And he showed maturity, poise throughout the spring into the fall. Against Southern Miss, he banged his thumb and hurt it and missed multiple weeks, which hurt his development probably a little bit. I think if he played all season, he might be the direct backup to Jordan Travis. So that's how good he can be. But he's still a freshman who's going to make freshman mistakes. We've seen that in practice. So it'll be interesting to see if he's thrown in the fire, how he reacts, because he does have the talent to get the ball to Wilson and to Keon Coleman, Johnny Wilson, or Jaheim Bell, the tight end. But he just has to be able to, you know, trust the process, trust that offensive line, and just not make freshman mistakes when he's out there.
Yes, and Kasim joining us covering Florida State, Tallahassee Democrat, noblesports.com, talking about, of course, ACC championship game, Louisville, Florida State. That number has been affected by Rodemaker's injury down to 1.5. We saw it as much as Florida State laying 3.5. So a big shift there through the key number of 3. Essen, let me ask you about Norvell in time frame. You know, this is I'm 45 years old, much older than the two of you, grew up with a very proud Bowden program. And then obviously Jimbo with the national championship, some lean years. And now here we are again. This is year 4, a 12-0 record. Is this right about what Norvell had expected to start to peak here around year 4? Is it on track?
It seems like it's on. I think they knew it was going to be a long rebuild. It's not going to be a overnight thing. We saw, you know, they had a shortened COVID season when they went 3-6, went 5-7 in year 2. That loss to Jacksonville State was devastating. They turned it around. You know, started that season 0-4, finished 5-3 to finish the season. Only reason they probably lost to Florida was because on the road was because Jordan Travis went down with an injury during that game. Could have had an even better start to end to the season. Obviously, last year, 10-3, where they had a little bit of growing pains in the middle of the season, but end of the season with 6 straight wins, have won 12 in a row, 18 in a row. So I think they are probably right around where they want to be. Obviously, the Jordan Travis injury probably takes away the championship expectations, not the expectations, but the chances. They're not going to admit that they're done ever, as no program should, right? They are right on track. And now what I'm most impressed about is, you know, Norvell has built this team through a transfer portal and lower-level high school recruits, 3 stars, low 4 stars. But now he's bringing in the number 3, number 4 class in the country, depending on which site you look at. So he's done a great job of just rebuilding the program through the transfer portal. Now he's getting in elite recruits. So I think this is just the beginning of what Florida State can do under Norvell.
You know, week 1, this team, this Florida State squad, opens with a massive win over then number 5 LSU. But throughout the year, Essen, we've seen some moments where you really question what's going on because they're so talented, but struggling with Boston College, struggling with Pitt, and then Miami, who's not very good. You know, that was a late game 1-touchdown contest. And because the schedule hasn't been so difficult for them this year, do you have any concerns about the Seminoles maybe peaking too early in their season?
I think that's a fair thing. Like, you know, they keep telling us after the game, they're like, oh, wait till we play a complete game. Wait till we play a complete game. I'm like, you're 12 games in. What does that mean at this point? They might have played their best game against LSU. I think that might be, you know, or Southern Miss the first 2 weeks when they scored 45 and 66 respectively. That might have been their 2 best games because we have not seen a complete game where they just dominated a team from start to end outside of maybe Wake Forest on the road, which was an impressive win. But once again, like you mentioned, not a great Wake Forest team. A little bit of struggles again, you know, we fell down 13-0 against North Alabama, 12-0 against a not very good Florida team. So I do have think maybe they might have peaked too early, and unfortunately that's how their schedule is set up, where they had 2 top 10 games in the first 4 weeks.
Let me get a prediction before we say goodbye here, Essen. Florida State, Louisville, what do you got? ACC championship game.
Oof. So can I give you 2 predictions if he plays and if not?
Of course you can. Go for it.
All right. So I had 31-24 Florida State. No, sorry, 34-27 Florida State if Tate plays, if Rodemaker plays. If he doesn't play, still go Florida State wins, but I'll go much lower score. Let's say 27-24.
Well, that's all we need, because we just need to figure out. We're just at this point, we're clearing one with Florida State laying it. So you did exactly what we needed. SM Chasm, Tallahassee Democrat, KnollSports.com, SN underscore Chasm on Twitter. Enjoy the game, SN. Appreciate you.
Appreciate it. Thank you for having me on.
Okay, thank you, buddy. Appreciate it. Now, a couple of things, big guy, and I want to talk about this because I've heard so much that one player, and Jordan Traff is a terrific talent, maybe the best player in the ACC, but one player does not make a team, and you continue to hear the propaganda. Go ahead.
One player is the reason they beat Clemson in Death Valley.
Can I finish? Can I literally get my thought out? The defense is among the best in the nation at getting to the quarterback. We know it. The offense doesn't turn the ball over. The D takes it away enough. But going back to what you just said, I'm not a child. We're going to pretend like the quarterback isn't the engine and the do everything dude for this team. Any way you want to paint the offense, doesn't give the ball away. Well balanced. It's all because of one person. Jordan Travis. When we start handicapping college football, and specifically the NFL for the most part, but both sports, obviously, when we start handicapping college football and the NFL, we always talking about win totals. We start with one player. That's it. And we always preface it, literally every handicapper and every pundit preface it by saying this: it all comes down to the health of the quarterback. So now I hear from Florida State people, yeah, but we're not here just because of Jordan Travis. You are legitimately 12-0 because of Jordan Travis. The rest of it is nice. The rest of it's nice. That's the reason coaches literally keep their jobs for decades because of one recruit in one recruiting period, a quarterback. Sorry. Go ahead.
Quarterback's worth most to the point as well, point spread as well. And Jordan Travis, it's not even just his physical abilities. It's his mentality. It's his calmness. It's his demeanor. It's his leadership. He literally willed them on the road at Clemson to that overtime win that they had no business winning. Jordan Travis was as much a coach on the field as Mike Norvell is on the sidelines. They're going to miss him tremendously, even though I love Tate Rodemaker.
The Rodemaker adjustment, price adjustment, is 3.5 down to 1. Imagine what Jordan Travis is worth. Let's come back and discuss. What would the number be, Louisville, Florida State, with Jordan Travis in there? Sharp money.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the sports betting network.
Okay, the holidays are here. Let Omaha Steaks take the guesswork out of gifting. Go to omahasteaks.com and save 50% off site-wide everything. Plus, when you use the promo code VSIN, V-S-I-N, at checkout, you get an additional $30, not percent, off your order. Send tender, juicy, butcher-cut filet mignons, mouth-watering burgers, gourmet, jumbo franks, or even easy-to-prepare meals that are ready in a flash. Omaha Steaks is a gift from the heart and a gift that will be remembered with every unforgettable bite. Order with complete confidence today, knowing that you're ordering the very best. Visit omahasteaks.com. Take advantage of the 50% off site-wide. Plus, remember, VSIN at checkout. Get an extra $30 off your order. Minimum order may be required. So, we've got the Pac-12 championship tonight, which we've been discussing, obviously. And then the biggie coming up on Saturday, Georgia-Alabama SEC championship game. Now, we do have Nick Saban coming up later in the show talking about the SEC deserves to be in the Final Four regardless. But let's ask somebody that knows better than most, and that is Brooks Austin, Dogs Daily lead editor. I think he is second in line at Georgia behind Kirby. That's really what Brooks is doing now. I mean, the dude is inside this. SI Fan Nation director of recruiting at Brooks Austin BA on Twitter, and he joins us. Hi, Brooks. How are you?
I'm doing well, gentlemen. How are you guys today?
Great. Thank you. Let me just give you a number and you tell me if it's respectful or disrespectful either way. Georgia is laying 5.5 v. Alabama in Atlanta on Saturday. What does that number mean to you?
I think that number speaks strictly to the one advantage on a unit, which is the offensive unit for Georgia. Though Alabama's offense has sort of peaked over the last, I don't know, month or so, it hasn't been consistently as dominant and as consistently as great and efficient as Georgia's offense has been. defensively, man, I can't separate the two. I know the stats can be separated between the two, but when you watch them on film, just body to body, guy for guy, they look relatively identical in terms of talent and how elite they are on the defensive side of the football. So I think that 5.5-point spread just goes to show, man, like this Georgia football team has been a top five offense with regards to efficiency all year. A lot of people will say that they haven't really played, you know, a top 10 defense, whereas Alabama hovers around that top 15 range defensively. So it really is a pretty interesting matchup in terms of strengths.
Okay. Of course, Brooks, you also have the Film Guy Network on YouTube, which is awesome. A lot of great learning information there. You talked about the three things Georgia must do to beat Alabama. Let's discuss those three things. Before you get into the three in particular, how's Georgia's health going into Saturday?
You know, there's the questions about Brock Bowers and Lamb McConkey and Tate Ratledge and Ra-Ra Thomas and Jamon Dumas Johnson. And there's a bunch, right? There's five starters on the front of it right there, just offensively and defensively. Four of those guys playing the offensive side of the football. I expect, you know, Brock Bowers and Tate Ratledge to go. They dressed last week, and they've been participating in practice, it sounds like. It's Lab McConkey and Ra-Ra Thomas are the ones that are, you know, quote-unquote questionable entering this football game. I expect both football players to give it a go, if you will. Definitely with an ankle injury like what Lab McConkey has. A lot of tape and a lot of, rehab going into that one, going into that football game. So I expect him to be, you know, about 90%, I would say, 85-90% there. I don't expect Pop, the linebacker, Jamon Dumas Johnson, to play probably until late December, early January, assuming they play in that time of the year.
Brooks, the evolution of Carson Beck, you and I discussed, I want to say it was week four of the season, and It was kind of vanilla on offense. But as the season went on, it seemed the playbook opened up. How much does he need Bowers? Does he need McConkey to be the guy that we saw putting up the bigger stats later in the season?
I mean, he survived the stretch, you know, midway through the year, three quarters away through the year, where Bowers was out for two games against, I think it was Florida and Missouri. That Missouri matchup, top 10 matchup, he goes into that game without Bowers. And, you know, I think they moved the ball relatively well offensively, and he answered the bell and answered the questions. The thing is about Carson, and Kirby spoke to this throughout the year, he's pretty consistently been the same guy all year long. And what that guy is the person who makes the right decision time in and time out and just operates within the offense. And I think when you look for an advantage in this football game, Alabama, guys, to me, is very, very schematically simple. They kind of just line up and play football because they can, because they have guys in every other matchup all year long that are just physically better than the man across from them. Well, that's not going to be the case every single down in this football game. When it comes to schematics, how multiple are you? Can you do a lot of things? Can you win a game in a multiple facets? That favors Georgia a ton in this matchup. They're just schematically a little bit more diverse than what Alabama has shown to be this year on both sides of the football.
So we saw it in 21. Brooks Austin joining us. We're talking Georgia, Alabama. If we have time, we can get to some of the other championship games as well. We saw it in 21. Georgia came in favored in that one, and Saban absolutely put a beatdown on Kirby and Georgia. The confidence-wise, like, there was confidence for Georgia going into that one. It doesn't feel like the confidence is equal here. What would you say if I painted it that way?
I mean, I think they feel like a confident bunch. They're just not flashy, man. And they don't talk, and it's not one of those things. The only thing I think that might portray some lack of confidence is just the vagueness with regards to the reporting on all the injuries. They are a banged up football team, man. But so is Bama on the other side of the football. When I talk to people inside the building around the program, I mean, they're confident as they always are. They go in and play to the quote-unquote standard. All the cliche stuff, I think, is why it really comes to fruit and comes to bear at this time of the year, because you can go and play to the full speed and the nature and ignore all the distractions because you're so brain beat into just playing to the standard and keeping the main thing, and all the coach speak in the world. They truly live that in and out of that building. I think both of these programs do. to be honest with you.
You mentioned watching this Alabama offense on tape, Brooks. What are you seeing from Jalen Milroe, and how do you think this Georgia defense matches up? You know, they've lost so much talent over the last few years to the NFL draft. I believe 34 players drafted the NFL. I think 8 were first round from the defensive side of the football over that time. How does this squad match up as currently put together versus what Milroe's been able to do over the last few weeks?
Yeah, I was fascinated going back to that simplistic nature of both of these, you know, offense and defense from Alabama. I went and charted every single snap against LSU because I was curious. I had a theory. I think he's more of a scrambler than he is a design runner, meaning I think they just let him get loose, or a lot of teams have and can't get him down when he scrambles, so he takes off chunk plays. They don't do a ton of design runs. That was my thought. So I went and charted every single rep against LSU. And of the 20 career, that's a career high in rushing attempts. Of the 20 attempts, 12 of them were scrambles. A 13th was a quarterback sneak on one of those Philadelphia, brotherly shove type plays. And then the other 7 were indeed like quarterback read option type stuff, or a sprint option type of actual work, adding him into the run count. But they don't move him a ton. He drops from the same spot every single time. I think that's by design. So when you talk about advantages or what's the key or anything like that, hey, when this guy gets out of the pocket, we have to make sure he's doing so running around our defensive line, right? We can't let him get out of the pocket going straight through it. You cannot let this guy get north and south immediately, because he will be and is the most electric football player on the field when that happens.
Okay, so you broke down the tape, both Georgia and Alabama. Brooks Austin, time for a prediction. Let's go. Walk me through it.
Yeah, I think Georgia's been consistently better on both sides of the football this year. The only way Alabama, in my opinion, wins this football game, it's a 24-18, just slobber knocker, ugly. Alabama's defense looks like the best unit in college football. I think more likely, I'm leaning more towards like a 34-21, Georgia controls the ball game type of performance from Georgia. They're really good offensively, man. I'm excited to see them actually have to play something other than vanilla. You mentioned them being vanilla offensively, and their schedule's been so that they can kind of be that way all year long. I'm excited to see what they can do.
Totally agree. Georgia's going to whoop Alabama. Mark that tape, big guy. They're going to whoop them.
Lay the points.
How different would our conversation be? A 4th and 34 doesn't connect. We're like, oh, Alabama's so disappointing. It connects, and it's only a 5.5-point game. You got to be kidding me. Georgia's going to absolutely roll them. Brooks, thank you. Dogs Daily Lead, of course, SI Fan Nation Director of Recruiting, and then the Film Guy Network on Twitter, on YouTube, is a must-see at Brooks Austin BA on Twitter. Thank you, Brooks. Appreciate you. Enjoy the game.
No doubt, boys. Y'all have a good one.
Okay, thank you. I mean, I've been standing on it. Might as well just continue.
Yeah, we're just going to talk to Brooks again in a few weeks to preview the national championship when Georgia's
in it. What's the point standing on a fence with the prediction?
Oh, I can see it going this way. You can see.
No. Georgia's better than Bama.
Standing on a fence.
And the truth is, 4th and 34 doesn't connect. Bama, terrible year. Hits. Bama, chance to go to the Final Four. Wait, what? Against a team that's won 46 of 47? Saban's next.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network.
All right, it is VSIN, the Sports Betting Network. This is Sharp Money presented by DraftKings on a Friday. We got a stranger with us today, and it's not Dustin Sweetelson. Mike Somich, of course, a gentleman I've known for a while. I love talking to Mike. He used to call all the time, but now he's a big deal. VSIN host and betting analyst, The Handle, weekends 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern time with Matt Brown at SomoBomb 18. I'll tell anybody that asks me, if you want betting knowledge, whether it be horse racing all the way down to curling. There's one person you should go to. That's Mike Somich. And I got to tell you, I was looking so forward to our conversation last Friday. Now, I'll start here and then we'll get to the big guy. The big guy's pouting. He's in a bad mood. He did the thing where he goes, I don't even care, because he's pissed. And we'll talk about what he's pissed about. He's going to smile through it and pretend like he's not, but he is so mad at me and you right now. I can taste it through the screen. We'll start with you, Somich. And speaking of the big guy, any truth to the rumor that the big guy is spreading about you, that you big timed us last week here on Sharp Money?
Man, you are just firing strays at me all day today, Patrick. This is ridiculous, man.
I said that Jordan Love is legit. I literally conceded Jordan Love is legit. I mean, I'm being the nicest friend ever. I said Dustin is spreading rumors about you.
I actually tried to set it up so I would be in Bar Canada last Friday, and I completely messed up my flights and then didn't tell you guys. So it's on me that I wasn't here last Friday. I'll take all the heat there. But I got to say, you know, a couple weeks ago, I drive down to Los Angeles. I offer you a free ticket to the Breeders' Cup, Patrick, and you just sat there. And you, I'm guessing that you were sitting alone in your apartment watching the History Channel or something instead of coming off the track.
No, that is factual. Mike Somich and probably racing dudes as well literally tried their asses off to help me out, and I ditched them straight up and down and sat at home. So that, like, I'm not going to protect myself. I'm just talking about the rumors Dustin is spreading about you, because remember at the beginning of the show when I said Dustin was bad-mouthing you, I said I agree with you on Jordan Love, and Dustin didn't say anything.
Well, and actually you were even worse to them, because they still sent you plays and you bet their plays and you won a lot.
That's
so
factual.
They made you a part of their party even after you rejected being there in person.
Let me clarify. I didn't say I was a good person. I just said Somich is also a bad person. I never, like, there was nothing about me protecting my character. I was saying Somich bad guy joins me bad guy. And now we get to the big guy.
What?
Okay. Because go ahead. Who wanted to go ahead?
I'm not a bad guy. I'm not a bad guy. I'm
no,
a good
you're,
guy.
No, you're this. A great guy, but you're also somebody that stands on pride. And you and I were having a conversation about the college football playoff and potentially the scenarios forthcoming. And I said, if Bama beats Georgia and Texas beats Oklahoma State, I said, there's absolutely no chance the committee's leaving out Saban and Bama. And you said, are you kidding me? Of course they're going to leave them out, because they're going to put Texas in.
Yes.
Is that fair? Is that fair so far?
If Florida State wins, yes.
Okay. Somich came on and said, you're insane. Not only is Bama getting in over Texas, Bama's moving up the three. Dustin, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, Dustin looked down at his papers. I asked him, are you okay? And he said, I'm fine, because I don't even care. Am I wrong, Mike? Where did I just lie?
No, you're totally accurate. And that's what would happen. Bama would jump up to three in that case. You have Michigan 1, Pac-12 winner 2, Bama 3, and Florida State 4 if they win. If they lose, Texas gets the 4. There's no way we're leaving out the SEC champion.
So I understand we want to do this with hypotheticals and projections when these teams don't play each other. But we have an example of Texas not only playing Alabama, but going to Alabama.
No, you're arguing. We're talking about what would happen. You're now making an argument for your argument in an abstract way. We're saying what's going to happen, what the committee will do.
Yeah, they will put Texas in. Head to head has to matter. They've said
that.
We got to
make a bet. We got to make a bet.
Let's do a dinner bet.
All right.
If Alabama wins and Florida State wins, Alabama's in, Texas is out for dinner.
So the only way one of us has to pay off the bet, though, is if Alabama wins.
Correct. Yeah. Because, yeah. I mean, I think Georgia's going to win. But if Alabama does win, they are in.
Yeah. Well, no. But yeah, I agree to the bet.
Okay. All right. Well, the bet will be between you two, because I literally don't live there and you'll be there.
And if you're not going to travel an hour, there's no way you're going to Vegas.
Yeah, just as good a chance to get you to come out to Vegas as we do in LA.
There is a lot. For a person that has social anxiety, correct me if I'm wrong, there were about 100,000 people at Santa Anita. Okay. That's a lot of people.
Just take a gummy.
I can't. The doctor said I can't, so I don't want to get into it. All right, Somich, nice to see you. All kidding aside, it's great to see you. Hope you and the family had a great Thanksgiving. Last night, let's get in everything we need to before we start moving ahead to tonight, Pac-12 championship game. Did you take anything away from... Look, I know you were watching at the beginning. I took two things. One, And Dustin and I were discussing this yesterday with Dak sitting 7-1 MVP. He's now, you know, 4.5, 4.75, somewhere in there. So after a great performance last night, he dropped, shortened up a little bit. That's one. And then two, Geno and that offense, and you've been a Seattle supporter, but they really couldn't find their identity. Last night, they found their identity in Dallas against this Dallas defense, which is pretty clear.
Yeah, pretty surprising, to be honest. I thought it was a great spot for Dallas and their defense to be able to step up. A lot of offensive line issues on the Seahawks side, but they protected Geno well enough. And look what happens, you get Metcalf the ball. I mean, they need to just try and force feed Metcalf here so that you can get him going and make him a real asset to that offense. I don't love Seattle to make the playoffs just because of how their schedule comes home. They have a very, this is the second loss in a row. They've got San Francisco next week. They've got the Eagles the week after that. So brutal set of four games there. Probably going to be 6-8 heading into the final three games. I like this team next year now, but I don't think the Geno Smith problem still exists. Look, he is not as good as he was last year. He's not as bad as he's been this year, but he's never going to be a top six NFL quarterback, right? And that's what you need to be able to win a title. On the Dallas side, look, I get all the Dak Prescott love. I think the number to win the MVP is too short because it's going to come down to one thing. Can they beat Philadelphia in 2 weeks? I don't think they can. I think they lose to Philly. This is a team that just can't get over the hump. You still have the Mike McCarthy problem in the clutch. They don't get it done against good teams. They can beat bad teams. They can beat mediocre teams. They have struggled for 3 years to beat a good team. I think that continues here. So I understand why you get the love from Dak Prescott. His numbers statistically are the best, but MVP is also a wins conversation here from a quarterback perspective. And Jalen Hurts is going to win 14 games this year. It's going to be hard to overtake him unless he loses the next 2 weeks, which I think is unlikely.
So play a game with me, Mike, because I think there's four clear-cut Super Bowl teams. 49ers, Chiefs, Eagles, Ravens. Then there's that next tier where I'd put the Cowboys, I'd put the Dolphins, Lions, and maybe even the Jaguars in that mix. Would you put any of those next four into the top four Super Bowl contenders?
No, I wouldn't. And I would probably have it three. I mean, I think it's 49ers, Eagles, and Chiefs. I would have the Ravens kind of a cut below those three and then go down to that group of four that you mentioned. Look, there's three really complete teams. And right now, I mean, I have San Francisco as 2 points better than any team in the NFL right now. That's the biggest gap I've had all season for any team to be on top. My biggest concern with San Fran, though, they need to stay healthy. They've got five key guys. If any of them get hurt, they become a significantly worse team. And it's McCaffrey, it's Debo, it's Ayuk, it's Kittle, it's the offensive linemen, the Trent Williams. You can't lose any of those guys. And they're all injury prone. So the likelihood they're all going to be able to play heading into the playoffs is a big concern of mine. But if they are healthy, they look dominant. The Eagles, I think, are sneaky good. They're not as good as they were last year. We're not getting the same results from them early where they were just jumping all over people early and just looked dominant because of it. But this is a team that knows how to win and believes they are going to win every time they get in those situations. And that makes a difference, especially when you're in the playoffs, especially when you got to go when everyone has to come to you at home. And then the AFC side, man, if the Chiefs catch the football, they're the best team in that conference without a doubt. They know how to win. They've got the best quarterback in the NFL. They've got a top five defense, top five offensive line. It's just figuring out, hey, are these young receivers going to step up or not? And that's going to be the big question for Kansas City.
I think I agree with Dustin, including Baltimore in that top tier. And here's why. I understand Lamar in the postseason. We haven't seen it. And the Mark Andrews miss is huge, boys. Their ability to run the football and their defense right now is, again, a bit of a paper tiger, and that is Dallas's defense. I think the Ravens defense is legit. Against the pass, I think they're second overall, somewhere 12, 13-ish against the run. They get to the quarterback. Like, I don't see a ton of weaknesses. I think the only wild card, and you too, we'll start with you, big guy. I think the only wild card people start to question is Lamar, but he's finally got weapons where it does feel like they can just do more, as opposed to once they get to the postseason, defense is just really focusing on him.
Yeah, look, as someone who I gave them out in the NFL betting guide for VSiN here, that was my pick was them to win the AFC, them to win the Super Bowl. They have frustrated me at times. Like the loss at Pittsburgh was frustrating. Losing in overtime to Indianapolis early in the year was freaking wild. So they're very odd. And the way they were closing out the Chargers, they were letting the Chargers hang around a little bit longer than I would have liked. So they are frustrating. However, I think if Monk in the OC can go back to the drawing board and come up with a new plan now that Keaton Mitchell has started to pop at running back, figure out how they can work Isaiah Likely in, see what routes he does differently than Andrews, and how they can rely on him more. The receiving's better, and I love the defense. I still think they'll be there in the end. It's a team that I can't quit and won't quit. And I think the biggest factor with Lamar this year is the contract has already been signed. He's laying his body on the line for a Super Bowl this year. There's no sitting. There's no resting. There's no business decisions when a hit's coming. He's going to try and win.
Poke away at the Ravens on the way out here, Samich.
They don't know how to blow teams out. They don't know how to step on teams' throats. They let teams back in the game. We've seen them have 10-point leads going into the second half, going into the fourth quarter, and end up losing those football games. I mean, they had an awful one against the Dolphins 2 years ago, up 14 with 7 minutes left, and they lost it. You mentioned that Chargers game. They let them hang around. You cannot let teams hang around like that when you don't have the killer instinct, and Baltimore just doesn't have that killer instinct.
Go ahead, big guy.
What about Philadelphia, them letting Washington hang around, go into overtime with an awful rebuilding team?
Philadelphia wins all those games. Baltimore loses theirs.
I feel like you're both yelling at me. I didn't do anything. Sharp money.